Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's at TicketKing.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Pulse of the Pack. In case you can't tell by the tone of my voice, it's Victory Monday. And not only is it Victory Monday, it is Thrashing Monday. Bird hunting season for those of you out there, even though I know that was weeks ago. Whatever you want to call it, it's a great day to be a Green Bay Packers fan. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, and I can promise you I went to work today decked out in green and gold. I was so happy all day long and all day yesterday, and we'll explain more as the show progresses. But joined with me as always is somebody that was probably happier than I was because he was in the stadium for that ass whipping yesterday. And that is Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm on cloud 12 today because I think we took over cloud. I think we took over clouds 9, 10, 11, and 12 after yesterday. Yes, I was in the stadium. Great environment, great atmosphere. Fans are awesome as always. Brought the noise, brought the energy, and why not? The Packers gave us every bit of reason, well, 38 reasons and 6 additional reasons why it was an incredible day at Lambeau Field, no doubt. Excited to notch up another thrilling victory against a really good team on the list of games that I've seen in that stadium. I'm pretty blessed, so no complaints.
And a team that we both share the same sentiment of absolute vitriol, hatred. I despise the Seattle Seahawks, and you can tell by some comments the Packers feel the same way because Randall Cobb says after the game that that's Seattle. You know, they're front runners. They're cheap shot artists when they start losing. Devontae Adams talks about how ragdolling Richard Sherman was better than him cheap shotting him in the middle of the field. It was just great all the way around. But, Jason, we got to start with some negative. And I can't believe that there's negative in a game that finished 38-10, but there was. If you are like me and watch the broadcast in the area that I am in, which is the Midwest, the Packers game was not on to start. I missed about the first 6 minutes of the game. And I am the type that is on edge throughout the game. And we pay for DirecTV's NFL Sunday Ticket. And because the game was local, it was blacked out on the Sunday Ticket channel, but it also wasn't on the Fox broadcast. Because they were showing the end of the Dolphins and the Cardinals, two probably non-playoff teams over a really big game. And I missed the Devontae Adams touchdown. So shame on you, Fox, for this. And I really didn't get anything until the middle of Green Bay's first defensive possession. I saw Seattle kick a field goal. And that's the first thing I really remember seeing. Jake Ryan and Jay Elliott and some guys making a big stop in the backfield on a 3rd and 1 in the red zone. I remember that. But, Jason, that is all I have for negatives today. What I want to start with, though, you were in the stadium, and this is one of the first times I am actually jealous of you because it's pretty rare, at least in recent memory, that you're in the stadium and I am not. Give me a recap. I remember last year when Seattle came to Green Bay, and you could feel the juice in the stadium. It was obvious. The fans were ready to avenge the loss of the 2014 NFC Championship game. Yesterday, Not as much on the line, obviously, because the Packers are not a lock to make the playoffs. And the Seahawks are not the best team in the NFC. That title belongs to the Dallas Cowboys. Nonetheless, other than the Vikings and the Bears, I do believe that the Seahawks are the most hated team in Green Bay these days. So what was the juice in the stadium like as the game progressed? And kind of take me through the reaction of the crowd as Devontae Adams roasted his opponent and scored the first touchdown of the game.
Well, a lot going on there. And, yeah, Jacob, it was kind of odd not having you there. And hopefully at some point down the road at a future game, we'll get a chance to reunite and do what we do, which is enjoy the heck out of Packers victories and then head over to Texas Roadhouse for a little bit of dinner and hopefully some player sightings. But it was – even before the game, you could feel the energy because it is the Seahawks. There's a lot of vitriol towards the Seahawks. There were some fans at the bars around the stadium, Stadium View, the distillery – and you could hear them kind of talking to the TV when they'd show Pete Carroll's face or they talk about the Seahawks and, you know, Seahawks suck and all that kind of stuff. And there were some Seahawk fans in town. I have to say, I mean, there's always opposing fans in the stadium, so you're never going to not see somebody from the other team, you know, fans of the other team in the stands. But there weren't a ton of them. I mean, obviously divisional opponents are closer, so it's more realistic to see them in bigger numbers. But so, you know, compared to the Bears, Vikings, it wasn't anything like that. But Adams, you know, I have to say, obviously I was in the stadium for it, so I didn't miss any of the game. But had I been sitting here at home, I would have been throwing things at the TV, emailing Fox, and tweeting at them in a not-so-nice manner. For those of you who follow me closely on Twitter, you know when I receive bad service or have an issue with companies, I usually tend to light them up because knowledge is power. And I don't know if you guys all know this, Jacob. I think you do know this. Having lived in Arizona for as long as I did before moving out here to the Minneapolis area about a year ago, I have never been a fan of the Arizona Cardinals. And, in fact, I still would say the Cardinals are probably my least favorite team in the entire NFL. I think it has to do with the way that they played. They were so bad for so long. Then they got good. They spoiled a couple Sundays of mine, obviously, in that stadium that they play in out there. Their fans are kind of fair weather. All those things kind of factor into it. I would have been absolutely livid. And to see a deep ball like that to Adams, because let me tell you, folks, for those of you who still haven't seen it, it was incredible. It was as incredible in person as probably more so than it was on the screen. I mean, Rodgers rolls out, throws a deep ball on the run. Adams has his guy beat. You see the ball lofting in the air. The DB's kind of catching up to him. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is going to be a nice long gain and set them up inside the red zone for a chance to score a touchdown. And Adams breaks the tackle, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, what a start. Absolutely amazing way to start the game. I mean, that place just erupted. The entire building just erupted. It was electric. And then when the Packers were on defense, they brought the noise. And it just happened to be one of those days where the Seahawks just, they either weren't feeling it. And let me tell you, you know, when you're not in the stadium, you don't get access to some of this stuff. You know, I'm there early. I was in the stadium 90 minutes before kick because I was just tired of sitting around waiting. It was a late afternoon game, and those are kind of torturous if you're waiting to go to them because you have to wait extra time to go to the game. So I'm sitting in the stadium, and I'm watching Seattle warm up, and these guys are out there in short sleeves, shorts, hooping and hollering with each other. Position groups are all out there together, jumping, chanting, making all sorts of noise, joking, laughing. I mean, they practice with the same type of air that you see them play with. It's their culture. It's how they are. They looked ready for this game. You know, the Packers a little bit more reserved. They kind of play a different style of football. So I'm thinking to myself, man, Seattle's ready for this thing. They know they're on the road. They know this is a tough game. They know they want to get a big win here, make a big statement, kind of put the foot on the throat of the rest of their division and really start contending for a top seed in the NFC. The Packers came out, you know, I always think of Mike Tyson's comments when he was asked about the Buster Douglas fight way back in the day, what, 30 years ago. You know, yeah, everybody has a plan. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And that's what happened to the Seattle Seahawks yesterday. They got punched in the mouth early, and their plan just went down the tubes. And that plan clearly ran through Russell Wilson at quarterback, and he could not have been more of a disappointment to that team than he was. So it was a great afternoon. I do have to say, when Burnett picked off that first ball and Jimmy Graham fell down and Graham gets up and walks and runs over to the official begging for a pass interference call, reminded me of Tim Duncan. You know, every time Tim Duncan would get called for a foul, it was that face that he would make. And I had some not so nice words for Jimmy Graham. So to those of you who are sitting around me, because I know you're all listening to this podcast right now, I sincerely apologize. I hope I didn't ruin your game day experience, but got a little amped up there. And then from that point forward, I was a little bit calmer, but it was a great day out there. The only thing that was missing, Jacob, which I was, you know, talking about jealousy. I'm still jealous of you because you got to experience it. There was no snow. The snow had stopped by the time kickoff happened. And so it was a snow-free day inside Lambeau, but nonetheless, the environment couldn't have been any better. It was an awesome game to be at.
Another thing, I'm not so sure if you catch it when you're in the stands as you do on the broadcast, because obviously you may be looking away from the play, but you know, there's several plays throughout that game where, and this is why my disdain for the Seattle Seahawks is the way that it is. I've got no problem with a team like the Seahawks that hoots and hollers, or like the Carolina Panthers last year that enjoys winning. You know, they celebrate their touchdowns. You got Cam Newton dabbing and pointing his first downs. You've got, you know, I don't have a problem with Richard Sherman talking trash and saying he's the best corner in the game, things like that. What I do have a problem with is when that team starts losing and they start pouting or taking cheap shots, which is what the Seahawks did yesterday. Richard Sherman, away from a play, absolutely annihilates Davante Adams. Unnecessary. I mean, I get it. It's football. It's physical. But nonetheless, it's pretty much the code. If you're away from the play, you don't go full speed and try and run somebody over like that because you're away from the play. I mean, that's just how it is. You know, Davante Adams was not engaged with him. He was running a route over the middle of the field, and Sherman ran him over. The kneel down before the half, Jeremy Lane runs full speed, Greg Schiano-type garbage into Randall Cobb. And then you've got, I believe it was Cliff Averill, punching T.J. Lang in the junk. And it's just frustrating from that standpoint because, listen, the Seahawks, you've got no problem running your mouth and letting people know when your team is winning. And that's great. That's fine. You know, Richard Sherman got trolled a little by Aaron Rodgers yesterday. Aaron looks over at him before halftime, and they're yucking it up, and Rodgers is laughing. And according to Aaron Nagler, Richard Sherman was not laughing. And then the Packers are moving up and down the field, and Rodgers mocks Sherman by yawning at him, which is what Sherman did to him 2 years ago when the Packers clearly were avoiding his side of the field. But that's the problem I have. The Seahawks had a problem with it. And they've had problems with this in the past. You know, you saw the way in the Super Bowl in 2015, 2014, the one against the New England Patriots where the Patriots win the game on the Malcolm Butler interception. Bruce Irvin gets in a fight and gets himself thrown out of the game. That's crap because, you know, I was always told when I was younger and I was the same way as, you know, if you're going to talk smack, that's fine, but you better be able to take it if you're going to be the one who dishes it out too. And the Seahawks clearly are a team that can't take it. And Randall Cobb said as much. I think that it was surprising to hear because the Packers typically don't take shots at their opponent. You know, usually it's very, you know, button up coach speak type stuff. And Randall Cobb basically said, that's the way Seattle is. They're a bunch of cheap shot artists. They're a bunch of front runners. Jason, did you catch any of that stuff in the crowd? And was there a little bit extra, did that add a little bit of extra stuff to your fan experience for both you and the people around you?
No, I didn't see some of that stuff. So I fortunately, so I have DirecTV at home, and I DVR every single game. And if it's worth watching a second time, I keep it. So, but one of the things those of you who have DirecTV and have the DVR know is that DirecTV likes to prioritize your shows for you. So if you happen to forget to put the recording that you have set to the highest priority, if there's something else set to record at that same time, which would probably, with my luck, likely be another rerun of Seinfeld that I could care less whether I have or not, it will trump that recording and it may not record. I've had that happen before. So I was hoping the game was saved. When I got home today and popped it on, went to look, it's there. I'm looking forward to watching the broadcast with Troy Aikman and Joe Buck. Not often you hear people say that, but just for the simple fact of hearing everything that I missed during the game, because you don't get the injury updates, you don't get the, you know, like you said, that intricate kind of back and forth, the camera work of finding guys on the sideline. And I will tell you what I did see, though, is there were a couple of, I saw some things, you know, throughout the game. We'll talk about it as we move along through the conversation. But one thing I will say is that I didn't see the Rodgers and Sherman thing, although I think those two guys highly respect each other. And I think that's just, that's all in good fun. After the game, they were midfield shaking hands. I saw HaHa Clinton Dix and Cam Chancellor exchanging jerseys and autographing it for each other, which, you know, to me is, you know, say what you will about Seattle. I'm always kind of like Cam Chancellor. So it was cool to see that happen. You know, it's like that level of respect where they want to swap jerseys. You know, you're not going to do that if you're that upset. I will tell you this right now. Jimmy Graham walked straight off the field. He didn't go shake hands with anybody, say a word to anybody. Game ended, he walked right off the field. Another thing that was interesting, Kristen Michael was the first Packers player off the field and into the tunnel, and he sprinted from the sideline into the tunnel. He did not stop to talk to a single Seahawks player. What you did see on the broadcast, and I caught this in live time as well, his first run to the outside, he ran hard. He hits the ball, the defender, goes sprawling out of bounds, gets up, taps a couple guys on the sideline as he's going back on the field as if to say hi, gives Cliff Averill a high five. And these guys were teammates just a couple weeks ago, but he did not talk to any of them after the game. So I don't know if he's still a little bit upset that he's not with them. They cut him, whatever. It's hard to really know what's going on there. But Demarius Randle, before he made any of his big plays, before he had the two interceptions, after big stops, would just turn to the Seattle sideline and just fold his arms and just kind of shake his head and just kind of do little dances. And, I mean, I love Demarius Randle, obviously, former Sun Devil, and, you know, he had a big day, so he backed it up. But it was one of those things where I'm like, man, it's really weird to see the shoe on the other foot with the team playing the Seattle Seahawks, because normally it's them that's doing that to their opponents. So I did, you know, that was one thing that I don't know if the TV caught. I don't think the TV copy caught that, but good, you know, good point, Jacob. There's things that you miss when you're at the game live, and then there's things that you don't see when you're watching a game on TV and you don't have the benefit of being there in the stadium. So, but a great day overall. And like you said, no love lost from us towards the Seahawks. And it was everything and more that the Packers could have ever put together. I mean, six turnovers, just absolutely incredible. But, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to watching the TV copy to kind of catch up on some of that stuff that I missed.
You know, you mentioned Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and kind of missing that. Is I think I'm the only one in the world that I'm okay with Joe Buck having my favorite team's game. I think Joe Buck is – the best football announcer in the business. I'm not a big fan of Troy Aikman, but I don't mind Joe Buck. And watching the hatred of him throughout every sport really is interesting to me. But, you know, that is what it is. You're not going to have everybody agree on everything, especially when it comes to announcers. But I move on. And to answer your question, no, I didn't catch anything about Demarius Randle looking over at the Seahawks sideline. But you could tell throughout the game that these two teams don't like each other. And the Packers have made it even more clear. You know, obviously they were the one who had the upper hand throughout the game, so you probably noticed a little more, but the Packers were reveling in just beating the hell out of Seattle. And that started, as we mentioned, with Aaron Rodgers. 3 weeks ago, you know, we mentioned Aaron Rodgers said that he really felt his team could run the table, and that meant that they could win their last six games. Well, now they're halfway to proving him right. And largely due to the fact that he is playing absolutely lights-out football. For all the talk earlier in the year about how something's wrong with him, you know, what's the deal, why is Aaron Rodgers struggling, what's his problem? Aaron Rodgers leads the league in touchdown passes. And if the Packers win these next three games and he plays amazing, which is probably what he'll have to do in order to win these next three games, you're talking about a guy that's probably in the MVP conversation. I mean, I don't know how you can leave that guy out. And, you know, this is on a year – somebody said earlier he was on pace for 39 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And this is considered a quote-unquote down year for him. I'm amazed at what is a good and a bad year. I always think that there's something that Aaron Rodgers – there's nothing more he can do to just impress the crap out of me, and then he does. And, you know, like Mike McCarthy said after the game, we're very spoiled because even some of Rodgers' quote-unquote bad games are still games that a lot of other teams around this league will kill for as far as quarterback play. And really, other than probably the New England Patriots, I don't know if there's a team that doesn't trade their quarterback for the guy that we as fans get to watch every week. But Aaron Rodgers lit up the Seahawks, and he's playing on a hot – both of his legs are hobbled. He hurts his hamstring a couple weeks ago against the Eagles. He hurts his calf on the touchdown pass to Davante Adams, and he plays the whole game hobbled on both sides of his body, and he still throws 3 touchdown passes, no interceptions. He has as many incompletions as Russell Wilson throws interceptions, and largely due to the distribution of the ball to both Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson. Those two, coming into the year, you probably thought the Packers receiving duo was going to be Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Well, it seems like we've gotten half of that right. Jordy Nelson is still very good. 2 touchdown receptions yesterday. He doesn't have the deep ball touchdown this year, but he still is a good possession receiver. He's on the same page with Rodgers. He's a red zone beast. He just does everything you could possibly ask him to do outside of scoring those long touchdowns, which realistically, touchdowns are touchdowns, whatever way they come. And the other one is Davante Adams. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, you were talking about a guy, or some people were talking about a guy, not you specifically, Jason, but people were talking about a guy that may not even make this roster. And now you can make a legitimate argument. He's the 1A to Jordy Nelson's number one. And he has been phenomenal during this winning streak. A little quiet in the Texans game, but regardless, great game against the Eagles. Very good against the Seahawks. And he could have had another touchdown if Aaron Rodgers didn't overshoot him. Probably the only bad throw Rodgers made the whole day is he missed at minimum a big gainer and more likely a touchdown just before the half there as Rodgers missed him. And you could tell he was upset. You can always tell when Rodgers knows he was the one who did something wrong because that's when he kind of – I don't want to compare it to Eli Manning because Eli Manning has like a specific face, but Aaron Rodgers has a specific reaction when he misses a throw, and that's what he did after this play. But how impressed are you, Jason? This is I know Earl Thomas didn't play. I know that. But this is still the Legion of Boom. This is still the number one scoring defense in all of football. How surprised are you that not only Jordy Nelson having a big game, but a guy like Adams who nobody outside of myself and Zach Cruz believed in going in, and Marcus Ebersol. Those are the 3 guys that I know of off the top of my head. Outside of us 3, nobody believes in this guy to have a big year. What? How surprised, how pleased, how amazed are you that they were able to do that, not just through this 2-game winning streak, well, 3-game winning streak, but the first 2 against the Eagles and the Texans, but more notably against the Seattle Seahawks?
It was surreal. It was just surreal. I mean, I'm not complaining. It was fun to watch. It's fun to watch the Packers whoop up on anybody. And when you go to a game, you and I don't happen to be season ticket holders, so let's not pretend like it's a big mystery. You're paying some pretty premium dollars for tickets. Jacob, maybe not you so much because you happen to have some good connections out there. I do. And so, you know, that's part of the reason why I do the podcasting and the writing that I do, because it kind of lends itself to my being able to go out there. This is my 3rd season in a row, so I feel very blessed to be there. Aaron Rodgers, for those of you who didn't see it after the game, because I stayed in the stadium until every last Packers player was in the tunnel, because one of the things I love to see is after the game, hey, who's shaking hands with who? I missed the coach handshake. You know, I didn't know if Pete Carroll was going to get on McCarthy for quote-unquote running up the score, which, frankly, after the NFC Championship game 2 years ago, I don't care how many points the Packers have and how few points the Seahawks have, keep scoring until the clock says 0. Side note, how redemptive was it for me to see an onside kick recovery by the Packers against the Seattle Seahawks live and in person? It was fantastic, and it was Richard Rodgers, of all people. So, ironically, that tight end was able to do his job effectively, unlike the other guy. But back on task here. Aaron Rodgers, when he left the field, could not jog off the field. He walked as gingerly as I have. I mean, I thought I was watching my grandfather. Because when my grandfather was alive, he always walked a little bit slowly, and I think he always had problems with one leg. I don't remember what – I think it was his knee, but he always had this particular gait. It was kind of like a limp, but not quite. It was just he was always walking so slowly and gingerly. Rodgers walks off the field, goes to the tunnel. Everybody's cheering, gives high fives to the kids. He was laboring every single step that he took. And I'm sitting here and I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, and this guy is somehow going to get himself ready to do this all over again 7 days from today. Whereas I am still dealing with this hamstring issue that I've had for the last 3 months, 3.5 months. And I'm quite a bit older than Aaron Rodgers, so age is my excuse. But I know how debilitating hamstring injuries and glute injuries can be. Now he's got a calf issue, and he's got both legs going on. I mean, mine's isolated to one side. So nothing short of spectacular. And his quarterback rating was 150. It was over 150. He had a hell of a day. You could count the number of incompletions on just a little over one hand. It was incredibly accurate. He did miss the deep ball to Devontae, and I thought to myself, that was so early in the game that I turned to the guy behind me and I said, we might see everybody on this Packers receiving corps get a deep ball touchdown. I mean, we might actually see the return of the shot play to Jordy for the first time all season, because they were getting deep and taking advantage of the fact that Earl Thomas was not in the game, because I don't recall the name of the safety right at the top of my head, but he was absolutely no Earl Thomas. But I'll tell you this, regardless of whether Thomas was in there or not, the way that, Earl Thomas doesn't play quarterback. Earl Thomas isn't on offense. So that defense would have had its work cut out for it either way, because Russell Wilson was just hot garbage all day. Speaking of quarterbacks. So, Russell Wilson gets mentioned amongst the elite and, the best quarterbacks in the game. He's been to 2 Super Bowls, got 1 Super Bowl win. I don't know, after yesterday, and it was only one game, but seeing them go head-to-head, and I know they don't play against each other, I don't know. It's almost kind of hard to put those two in the same conversation, at least for this week, because there was clearly a huge disparity between those two guys. Aaron Rodgers is just a phenomenal human being. He's a phenomenal – well, I shouldn't say a phenomenal human being. I don't know him outside of football, but he is a phenomenal football player. And, Jacob, I think you'll agree with me. We're both very glad to call him ours.
Absolutely, and I say that, every week, even when he was struggling, you watch, and I use the term struggling really loosely, you watch some of these other teams with their quarterback play, and you're just like, God bless the fact that we have Aaron Rodgers. He's the best quarterback in football, guys. And that's something that maybe he forgot about for a little while, because I'll be the first to admit, he did struggle earlier in the year. But he's still the best quarterback in the world. And if you ask me tomorrow, who are you taking first overall, you start teams over in an NFL draft scenario, I don't care that he's 33 years old. I am taking Aaron Rodgers, and I will take the next 6 or 7 years that he's the quarterback. That's my guy. We could gush about Aaron Rodgers all day long on the show, but he just lit up the Legion of Boom. And, yes, minus Earl Thomas, still a good secondary. I got to give a little props to the Packers offensive line as well, because the Seahawks had nothing that resembled a pass rush yesterday. Michael Bennett was dead silent. Cliff Avril didn't do anything. The only time the Seahawks sacked the Packers was a coverage sack, and Aaron Rodgers simply held onto the ball too long, probably because he couldn't escape the pocket and throw the ball away. So, great performance by the offensive line, great performance by the quarterback. One mention for the running game real quick. Ty Montgomery got the start at running back. Just change his number, change it to number 34 or whatever number you want it to be, and call him a running back, and that'll ease some people's concerns about him, I think. Christine Michael got to play, got some action. Jason, you mentioned his first run. That was nice to see, but then you also got the other side of Christine Michael, where he had the blunder where he went the wrong way on a running play, and it was a 3rd and 2. He cost the Packers 3 points because Crosby missed a 51-yard field goal. At minimum, he cost the Packers 3. Maybe 7 points out of that deal. But the story of this game was not the offense, because realistically, even with some of the struggles of the last year and a half, the offense is still something that you expect to play well because they have number 12. The story of this game was the defense. And they were – here's the story right here for me. The Packers were minus 5 in the turnover margin for the season coming into the game. They are now plus 1 with 6 takeaways, 5 interceptions of one Russell Wilson. They've intercepted him, I believe the number is 10 times the last 3 times they've played him. 9 in 2 of those games. You have 5 yesterday and you have 4 in the NFC title game a few years ago. I can't say enough, but the biggest play of the game, in my opinion, was when the Packers, just before halftime, it's 21-3, and Russell Wilson's taking a deep shot down the field. And Doug Baldwin is wide open because Micah Hyde forgot what he was doing, which that's another topic for another day. I said not much negative on this show. But Demarius Randall runs the ball down, and he looks like a Gold Glove center fielder. I mean, he looked like Willie Mays running that thing down. Jason, what was the – Demarius Randall says that he heard the crowd groan as the ball went in the air because they thought they knew it was a touchdown. And then it went from that to pure elation for Demarius Randall because he ran the ball down and got an interception. What was the reaction in the stadium like where you were at when Randall made that play just before halftime?
Well, I didn't hear the crowd groan. But when you're watching a play, I'm trying to remember, I saw Wilson throw the ball deep, and I think this season we've all been conditioned to think as soon as the quarterback throws the ball deep that there's probably a receiver in the vicinity of where the ball is going, and chances are that receiver is ahead of the defensive back. Because that just has been the story all season long, and even though they've won 2 in a row, we're kind of snake-bitten that way. It's just kind of the way it's been this season. So I see Wilson release the ball. You know, it's interesting. When you're watching a game live, the ball seems to be in the air longer. So I look over at Baldwin, and he's by himself. And I'm thinking to myself, like, is he going to be in bounds? You know, that was my first question, was is he going to be in bounds or is it going to be in the back of the end zone? And then Demarius Randall comes in out of nowhere, makes the interception. One thing I want to say about this play, watch it again and think to yourself, because who did we lose? Who did the Packers lose in week one? That was kind of a catastrophic loss if you think about it on defense. Who did they lose in week one, Jacob?
That would be Sam Shields.
And Sam Shields is unrelatable to any other Packers player because of the speed that he possesses. You and I were at the Chiefs game last year, and I almost want to go back and watch the TV copy of this particular play. Jeremy Maclin comes off the line, catches a slant, takes off down the field. Sam Shields is on the other side of the field, turns around, turns on the Jets, and I just see this blur. And he chases down Jeremy Maclin and tackles him just shy of the goal line. That speed is unmatched, but that play that Randall made reminded me so much of Sam Shields and his ability to close. It kind of reminded me of the pick that Shields had in the NFC Championship game against the Bears to kind of seal the win. You know, that's the kind of playmaking that the Packers brought Demarius Randall in here to do. That's the kind of stuff that he used to do at Arizona State as a safety. He was incredible that way, always around the ball. You know, he's got this reputation for going after the football. I don't remember what his first game back was. I want to say I think it was Washington. I think Washington was his first game back, if I'm not mistaken. And if it wasn't Washington, maybe it was Philadelphia. But either way, a couple times he went for the ball and didn't make the play. And I'm not saying that's the way to go all the time, but you're gonna risk reward there. Well, there was huge rewards paid yesterday, and again, it's hard to replace Sam Shields completely, but that was a Sam Shields-esque type of play, and if that's the kind of elevated that they're going to get from Randall as he continues to recover from that surgery and that core injury, and he gets himself more and more in game shape and recovers more and more, then the Packers' defense might be getting a huge boost and peaking at the perfect time. I didn't hear the groan, like he said, in the crowd, but what an incredible play. But it was just a one play stacked on top of so many others throughout the day that came in at critical times, because the Seahawks didn't even score a touchdown until the fourth quarter. So, and the Packers just continued to come up with big play after big play after big play. You had Demaryius Randall in the end zone. You had Quentin Rollins in the end zone. I mean, there is no better turn of events than not only stopping the team from scoring, but taking the ball away and getting the ball back. So that was, you know, that was the second pick of the day. The first one, like I said, was the Burnett on the Jimmy Graham falling down. Just a parade of interceptions. Now, I guess other fans know how Packers fans must have felt that day that Brett Favre tossed six, but that was a playoff game in St. Louis, because it was like every time he threw the ball, something bad was happening, and that was just kind of the way it went. Unfortunately, it was on the Seattle side, not the Packers side yesterday.
And I can tell you from a fan standpoint of watching the game, it was like every time Wilson threw the ball, I was expecting it to be intercepted, as ridiculous as that sounds, because Wilson usually takes care of the ball. But yesterday – and now, let's not pin everything on Russell Wilson. I'll be the first to tell you, I don't like Russell Wilson, probably because of who he plays for. And he's said some really weird things in the past. And, Jason, we've actually made a lot of jokes on this show at his expense. But – it was just – he didn't get any help either. You know, Doug Baldwin had one go off his hands. Jermaine Kearse didn't fight very hard for a ball. That resulted in Quentin Rollins' interception. He had another ball tip off the running back's hand, and it went right into the hands of Micah Hyde, which I think the funniest play of the day was still, though, when Baldwin – Demaryius Randall falls down, and the ball bounces off Baldwin's shoulder pad and into Demaryius Randall's hands. That's how you knew it was the Packers' day, I think, right there. But the bigger story here now is – Packers' last three games on defense, they've given up at least 30 points, I believe, in four consecutive games between the end of October and the end of November. And a couple 40-pointers in there as well, and they just looked inept and terrible, and everything was bad. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, if the Packers have a bad performance against the Eagles, do you Lane Kiffin, Dom Capers, and even just let them on the plane once the game is over? But since that time, they have allowed 36 points in the last three games. That's an average of 12 per game for you mathematicians. And, yes, I did have to count on my fingers for that one. So, forgive me for that. I'm so overcome with emotion today. But 36 points in the last three games. Brock Osweiler, we talked about him last week. Carson Wentz clearly doesn't have very many weapons and is starting to struggle a little bit. But the Seahawks have a pretty good offense. And it's not like earlier in the year when Wilson's running for his life throughout the day and he can't really move that well because his knee's fine. He's healed. He's good to go. And the Packers just annihilated Seattle on the defensive front. So what I want to know, Jason, are you buying into this defense going into the last three games? And those of you that don't know, they play Chicago on the road. They're at home against Minnesota, and they're at Detroit. They should be able to have some good performances on defense in these next two games because the Bears are one of the worst scoring offenses in all of football. The Vikings offense is a train wreck. And then the Lions have a good offense. That will be a good test for them in the last game of the season, especially if it matters for the NFC North crown. But what is your confidence level in this defense right now?
Yeah, I mean, talk about bias. I'm probably a little biased just because I witnessed their best game in, I mean, possibly over 2 years yesterday in person. And I think that those kind of things lend themselves to confidence, and confidence on defense is where you get some of those turnovers from. I mean, ball bounces in the air. The Packers have just not been there to collect those opportunities the first part of this year. I was screaming and crying before they lost four in a row. They're not making enough plays. We need more playmakers. We need more guys to make plays. They're not taking the ball away. They're negative in the give take, which is great to finally see them in the plus column, because that's the hallmark of these Packers teams, and they've always been great at taking the ball away, and that's the hallmark of a great team. Even back when Holmgren was here, and you had those great teams in the late 90s, they were taking the ball away in bunches. They had great defensive backs, great safeties that were always picking the ball off and ball hawking. So you saw great performances. We've been talking about the secondary so much because that was the fireworks of the day, but we haven't even gotten to the linebackers and the defensive line. We haven't even gotten to Dayton Jones and five hits on the quarterback that he had. We haven't even gotten to Mike Daniels and the you know, how about we be the bad guys for once? Well, the Packers were the bad guys yesterday, and it felt pretty damn good. And then you got the linebackers. Clay Matthews is out there doing everything that he can. His presence was still something the Seahawks had to account for. Jake Ryan's taped up and playing when he can. They're about to get Blake Martinez back. I'm hearing there's a possibility that he could practice and play this week against Chicago. Joe Thomas had a pretty decent game. Those guys all feed off of each other. So, yeah, I can buy into it. I don't know. I don't expect to see what I saw yesterday. You know, I don't have to see him turn over get six turnovers in a game, not even against the Bears and Matt Barkley, who somehow found a way to make it a game against the Detroit Lions in Detroit. But I absolutely buy it because I talk about momentum and confidence all the time. You hear those buzzwords come from me, and, you know, as you know, I'm not a big X's and O's guy, but I know what football teams, when they're successful, there's specific things that tend to be kind of consistent, and one of them is confidence and building on one great performance into the next, into the next, into the next. I mean, these guys are going to go into it thinking to themselves now, like, hey, we just got five turnovers. Why don't we come out? Why don't we go out and get some more? Morgan Burnett said their secondary has a goal every game of getting three turnovers. Well, three is a lot to ask. I mean, that's very lofty. That's a very lofty goal. I'm in sales, and I can tell you, you're going to get lofty goals thrown at you when you're in sales because that's just kind of the way that it goes. You want your goal to be kind of a stretch but not unattainable. Three is kind of pushing that unattainable level because it's so hard to get. But this defense is the rotation, the guys, Dean Lowry, your boy Dean Lowry, Jacob, with the first sack on Russell Wilson. That kid can move. He's got some speed. He's not super big, but he's on film now, and he's somebody that opposing offense is probably going to want to start paying attention to. I'm not saying that he's all of a sudden going to take over for Mike Daniels or he's going to turn into the second coming of insert great defensive lineman name, you know, Cullen Jenkins or, you know, whatever. But these guys are all contributing. Christian Ringo, I missed Christian Ringo sprinting in and pancaking the left tackle. I really wish I would have seen that happen live. There's just so many things that are going on. But if they're going to get contributions from all those guys like that, Ladarius Gunter playing well, yes, this can be one of those no-name defenses that all of a sudden just takes the league by storm, and suddenly the Packers are deep in a playoff run.
And that's kind of where I tend to lean, although I don't think it's a no-name defense because at the beginning of the year, Jason, you know, we talked about Demaryius Randle and Quentin Rollins, and we talked about, obviously, you know, Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, but Dayton Jones was another name. If they can get Nick Perry back, that would be a good thing. Jaron Elliott is Shakespeare because all he does is make plays. And no, that is not a corny joke for me. That is what they call him on the team. He had a sack yesterday, and he buried Russell Wilson on his one sack. You mentioned Dean Lowry. That's a guy who's come on as of late, and he's a guy that they need because Mike Pennell isn't going to be able to play for most of the rest of the season. They need Dean Lowry to play well. And you know what he has? He has a sack in back-to-back weeks. Yesterday he had a really good play. Mike Daniels with a good push up the middle. He does everything every single week. You mentioned Clay Matthews. You know, HaHa Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett, very good safety tandem. I don't think this is a no-name defense. I think they're starting to get, one, some of their guys back and healthy, and they're also starting to get contributions. Some of these guys are starting to play better. Julius Peppers is playing like the Hall of Fame player that he is. Dayton Jones played like a first-round pick yesterday. Clay Matthews is Clay Matthews. And, you know, yesterday I saw, again, I don't understand your guys's, and I say your guys's in a general term, but I don't understand the hatred for Clay Matthews because, no, I know the sack numbers are not there. I also know that his presence has to be accounted for, Jason, like you said. The Packers dominated the game defensively yesterday, in which Jake Ryan, their starting inside linebacker, played 8 snaps. Their best outside linebacker, Clay Matthews, played 24 snaps. That's a small percentage of the number of plays they were on the field. I don't know if I want to fully buy into this defense, but they're going a ways toward proving it. Now, if they do what they're supposed to do against Sam Bradford and Matt Barkley here down the stretch and then beat Matthew Stafford in his home stadium to win this division, I will be as confident as I've been in a Packers team going into the playoffs as I can remember. Because they'll go into the playoffs having won six in a row, and that really leads us to our next question, and that is, what overall, 3 weeks ago, we buried this team. I mentioned I'm done with Mike McCarthy. I'm done with Dom Capers. We're talking about Elliott Wolf maybe being the general manager and picking the next head coach. Overall, what are your thoughts on this team? And my thoughts are they're 7-6, and no, they don't control their own playoff destiny. But if they can get in, there's not a team in the NFC that's just terrifying to me. Yes, the Cowboys are good, and the Packers don't match up that great with them. But the Cowboys also don't match up very great with the Packers on the defensive side of the ball because they can't rush the passer. And if you can't rush Aaron Rodgers, good luck. I mean, with the way Rodgers is playing, Ty Montgomery gives them a semblance of a running game. And the Packers' defense now, in my opinion, on the passing side of things, at least in the pass defense, is better than it was the first time they played Dak Prescott. And if they have Randall and a healthy Quentin Rollins and Ladarius Gunter continues to play well, they can stack the box to try and stop Zeke Elliott. We watched them yesterday against Seattle. We know what they can do against the Seahawks. There's no team in the NFC to me that is just terrifying. I'm as confident in this team. I literally went from, can they get Jabril Peppers, and maybe not necessarily him. I just use him because he's a Michigan guy. But can they get a top 10 pick and replenish some of the talent that they've got that they haven't been able to get because they've been picking low in the draft? To now I'm wondering, can they win the freaking Super Bowl? I mean, you look around the league. Tom Brady is great. The Patriots are great. They don't have Rob Gronkowski anymore. The Oakland Raiders defense is not good. The Kansas City Chiefs have Alex Smith at quarterback. I mentioned the NFC. You talk about the AFC contenders. It's the same thing. It is a wide open league. And to channel, and I hate to use this reference, but the 2004 Boston Red Sox motto was, why not us? Well, that'd be my first question then, Jason. Tell me, why not us?
At this point right now, after yesterday, that is a great question, and I ask the same question. But it's a week-to-week thing. And I will be very honest and say they come out and struggle next week, or worst-case scenario, don't beat the Bears, then we're right back to maybe where we were a couple weeks ago after they lost to Washington. And we were talking about those draft picks. I mean, Jacob, we had some very lengthy conversations about, for once, how our biggest excitement in the offseason was going to be talking about the talent the Packers were going to add, because they were going to be picking in a primo spot for once instead of 24th through 30th like they have been. So, but now, all of a sudden, here we are. You know, somebody, I think it was Zach, you know. We mentioned Zach Cruz every single week, I feel like. But he does such a good job tweeting out stuff. You know, his comment was, the Packers lose to Seattle, their season is in all likelihood probably over. But if they win, suddenly anything is possible. And it is. Because even though it was at home, you know, the Packers laid it down. I mean, they took it to a top team. You mentioned all these top contenders. You know, to talk about the AFC, obviously is looking ahead to the big show. They got to get past the NFC first, but beating a team like Seattle the way that they did, and every team is different, and I talk about matchups all the time, but I sat there thinking to myself yesterday, if somehow Dallas slides and the Giants slip in there and sneak the NFC East away from them, and the Packers are able to run the table, win the North, there is a possibility somehow that the Packers could be hosting the Cowboys in a playoff game at Lambeau Field yet again. So, I mean, there's a lot of football to be played still. There's a lot to keep an eye on, but it's a week-to-week thing. You said, why not us? Well, it's a week-to-week thing. I mean, right now, that's a great question. beat the Bears, you know, beat the Bears in convincing fashion and in an even colder environment because it's supposed to be in single digits at Soldier Field. It was 32 degrees at Lambeau yesterday. That's cold, but it's not chill. It's not freezing. It's not frigid. So you get into the single digits, and we all probably remember, or at least the vast majority of us probably remember back in 07 when the Packers had only lost two games all season long, and they went into Chicago at the end of the season and laid an absolute egg on one of the coldest days that I've ever seen a Packers team play in, and they just got their butts handed to them. And I remember in that game, John Ryan, Seahawks punter John Ryan, was the Packers punter at the time, and he tried to kick a ball, and the wind blew it off a track, and I think he kicked it with his shin, and it went all of 10 yards, maybe 15 yards. It was just horrible. But go out there, beat the elements, beat the Bears, stack those. You know, you've won four in a row now. Week to week, it builds. But you slip up and you have a loss, even if it's a close game or if it's a tough one, and you just kind of get outplayed. It's the standard the Packers have set, Jacob. It's that, you know, that we expect playoffs. We're spoiled. But that's what the Packers should be doing when you have an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and if the defense is capable of playing like they did yesterday, now we're not going to accept anything less. Anything less is probably a little bit extreme, but we're not going to accept a bad day because we just saw them have a phenomenal day. They were everywhere they needed to be. They got the turnovers. They made the plays. They made the stops. They did everything. They got the pass rush. They put it all together. They were missing guys. So, the bar has been set once again. But why not us? Absolutely, for now. Valid question.
Very valid question, in my opinion. And, yeah, that kind of leads us to the next point of the show is all of this is moot if the Packers go into Chicago and lay an egg. And, like you mentioned, the high on Sunday is 4 degrees. That's as warm as it's going to get. Not going to be a pleasant day, but the bad news for yesterday is they got literally no help. Anybody that the Packers needed to lose, the Lions, the Vikings, the Redskins, the Bucks, any team that's ahead of them, they all won. Which means, and I always thought this, that the most direct path for the Packers to the playoffs is Detroit loses to either the Giants or the Cowboys, and then the Packers beat them and win the rest of their games as well, win the NFC North that way. But, you know, Jason, you mentioned it. If a couple of things break their way, and that they would need quite a few things to break their way, but the Packers still, I believe, have a chance at the second seed, which is crazy to think about. I mean, I can't imagine the second seed is going to be 10-6 in the NFC, but stranger things have happened. And let's look ahead to Chicago right now. My question is, this game feels like a layup, which is terrifying because it's a division game. I know the Bears aren't good, but they weren't good last year, and they came into Lambeau Field and beat the Packers on Thanksgiving. The Packers have a chance to tie the all-time series against the Bears if they do win this game, and they need to win in order to keep their playoff hopes alive. Again, you know, ever since the Eagles game, it's been if they win, they're still kicking. If they lose, you know, my Dumb and Dumber reference from last week, you're in the so you're saying there's a chance type of mode. And that's where this game is as well. If the Packers win, they're 8-6 with two games to play. See where the chips fall after that as far as the other teams go. If they lose, they're 7-7 and it's probably over. So my question to you, Jason, then is, should we be more worried about the Chicago Bears?
I don't know if you and I should be worried about the Chicago Bears, but I think the Green Bay Packers should definitely be worried about the Chicago Bears. But I would say that about any opponent that they play, because every game is a playoff game at this point, because a loss is going to be too much to overcome. They already need some help as it is. Lose a game, now you're really in the crapper. So we've seen bad things happen this season. I point to the Colts game. The Titans game was bad, but Tennessee was taking it to Green Bay from the very beginning, and the Packers never had really a chance in that game. They were pushed around, deflated, and stopped trying. So really the Colts game I point to as it is possible for them to disappoint. It's possible for them to lay an egg. It is possible for them to somehow struggle for reasons that they shouldn't, against teams they shouldn't, players they shouldn't. Add in all the shouldn'ts that could possibly happen. And we've seen a lot of examples in the past of teams coming off huge wins who fall apart and then have a disappointment the following week. Normally, at this time of the season, the Packers have built up enough of a lead and momentum, and they've got a record as such that a loss isn't going to completely derail their season. It might cost them seeding in the playoffs, but they're still trying to get into the tournament. So, you know, it's you know, the Bears played well against the Lions yesterday. They didn't win, and they don't have much to play for anymore this season. But they're at home. It's against the Packers. They can ruin Green Bay's season. And we've talked about how this is the longest-standing rivalry in football, but it's not really much of a rivalry because over the past 20 years, the Packers have really owned the win-loss column. But this is still the Packers and the Bears. They're still almost 100 years' worth of history here. They're going to be coming with their best game plan. John Fox is coaching for his life. I'm sure he doesn't want to have to pick up and move his family and give up after his short stint with the Bears. So they're going to be coming with a good game plan. And then the Packers need to take this very seriously. I think Green Bay needs to come out and kind of like they did against Seattle. They need to strike early and first and build up a lead, because you build up a lead like that in their building and you kind of take the crowd out of it and they realize, okay, we're going to get run over like this all game long. A team like the Bears is going to stop playing hard. You know, it's only going to take a decent lead in the first quarter and first half, and then you can kind of go into cruise control mode, and then it becomes a little bit of an easier victory. But you got to do the work first, Jacob. And so much like you, can't overlook it. There are no layups. There are no gimmies at this point.
No, and I think you mentioned it perfectly. A fast start. The Bears' best asset is Jordan Howard, and that's. My next question was, who are you most worried about? And my answer is Jordan Howard. I loved him going into that draft. The Bears have done very well using him as a fifth-round pick. He's their best running back. He's their best offensive player. The Packers' run defense is not dominant like it was earlier in the season. It's still decent, but it's not dominant at all. And the Bears, you know, this is the type of game where, you know, if it's going to be freezing cold like that, the Bears already want to get off the bus running the ball, to use the old Lovie Smith adage. They're going to want to give the ball to Jordan Howard as much as possible. And if they're down 14-3 early in the game, they can't really run the ball as much. The Packers can still exploit some things. The Bears have a lot of inexperience at the cornerback position. I think that bodes well for the Packers in this game. Obviously, they're pass rushers. Leonard Floyd has done some good things. Pernell McPhee is a good pass rusher. But overall, I like the Packers' matchup of their offensive line against just about anybody, especially now that T.J. Lang is back. You may get J.C. Treader back soon as well. We'll see what they do at the center position when they do have to make that decision. But you're right, Jason. You know, there is no such thing as a layup. And, you know, that's really what – after they beat the Seahawks, you're kind of thinking that's what this game is, because it's natural thing. Okay, the Seahawks are good. The Bears are not. Packers are going to roll. And I just don't necessarily feel that way, even though the Bears are playing Don Barkley of quarterbacks, Matt Barkley, and really not a lot of offensive weaponry. They find ways to beat themselves. They're one of the worst scoring offenses in all of football, and their defense is probably average at best. But I agree with you. There are no layups in this scenario. This game is not a layup. The Packers need to be, to use Mike McCarthy's adage, foot on the gas, hands on the wheel, blow the Bears away, get out of Soldier Field with a win, get out as healthy as you possibly can, and then focus on a big matchup against the Minnesota Vikings on Christmas Eve. So, Jason, I answered my own question, which is, what Bears player gives you the most worries? You know, last week we talked about Jimmy Graham or Tyler Lockett, and the Packers did a really good job of limiting both of those players. This week, that player for me is Jordan Howard. Is yours Alshon Jeffery? Is it Leonard Floyd? Who do you got for the Bears that gives you some worry?
Josh Sitton.
That's definitely an interesting pick. An offensive lineman, Josh Sitton.
I was curious how long of a gap I was going to get there before you jumped in. I could not be less worried about Josh Sitton. Jordan Howard's definitely a good one there. You know, the Bears are just – they're decimated. They've had injuries this season. So their key role players are, you know, have been out or have been ineffective. In the last win over the Bears, I think Jeffrey had one catch. Didn't have a very good day. He is, of course, the football gods have activated him just in time off of his PED suspension and in time to play the Packers. So Alshon Jeffrey could be a potential, although I guess I'm going to kind of trust what I shouldn't trust, which is that the Packers can just do what they did last time just because they did it once and say that they're going to shut Jeffrey down. But I don't know. He's coming back off a 4-game suspension. I don't know how effective he can be. The Packers secondary should be playing with some confidence. So I'd like to think that without another real legitimate receiving threat, that they have a good game plan to kind of shut him down. If they were able to stop Doug Baldwin, who, you know, Baldwin's had a really good season. He's turned into a nice receiver, a really good receiver, and also Jimmy Graham. So I'm not going to go with Alshon Jeffrey. You mentioned Leonard Floyd. I think Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd are probably the two guys that maybe have me a little bit worried, because they've been doing well getting to the passer, and the Packers' offensive line has played really well. I mean, they kept Aaron Rodgers clean against one of the best fronts that we've seen in the last 5 years in all of the NFL in Seattle. I mean, Michael Bennett was a ghost, and that's no small task. So there's no reason to think that the Packers can't successfully ward off some of these guys. But like I said, you know, it's one of those games where Chicago's going to probably try to throw some wrinkles at Green Bay because they want to try to make a statement win, get the home crowd fans a big win in Soldier Field. It's another chance to beat the Packers. And I think if I'm not mistaken, if the Packers win this game, they will have accomplished something that they have not been able to do for decades and decades, which is even up the all-time series. I think this would even the all-time series up and even it up to where both teams will have won as many won and lost. You know, they'll have the same record, same number of wins, and then I think there's a couple ties in there. So there's a bunch of reasons why Chicago would try to throw everything but the kitchen sink at Aaron Rodgers, especially knowing that he's a little less mobile. And so I think the pass rush is maybe where you look for some of those problem areas.
You did mention the all-time series potentially being evened up, and that is the case. If the Packers win this game, they will even up the series. I thought last year was the perfect year to do it because it was on Thanksgiving. It was Brett Favre night. This year, it just seems – I mean, obviously, you can think of a better year all the time, and this year it seems even more perfect because the Packers are fighting for their lives as the season here comes to a close. I kept this for the end – on purpose, Jason. We got to go back now for Adam Cech's ticket king of the game for the game against the Seattle Seahawks. And I feel like as many good plays as happened, we could give out several. I mean, Jason, I felt like you could have written Gone with the Wind for your game balls comment or for your game balls column, because there were just so many guys to choose from. However, we mentioned at the beginning of the year that it is a bit of a cop-out, and I mentioned on Twitter that I would reference Avenged Sevenfold for my ticket king of the game. And the reason I do that is because for me, and the anniversary for this is coming up, the reason I started really podcasting after I left college was based on one of their songs. And I started From the Benches with Ross Uglum. And what we did was when Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone a couple of years ago, Ross and I kept referencing either, you know, from The Dark Knight, we'd say the Batman has to come back, or we would reference The Return of the King for when Aaron Rodgers would come back. Well, the day after Christmas in 2013, it was announced that Aaron Rodgers was healthy and going to start a game against the Bears, and I was elated because that game obviously was for the NFC North crown, and we all know how it ended. Rodgers to Cobb, that is in our intro. It is one of my favorite moments as a Packers fan in my cognizant lifetime because of who the team was, how that season went, all that kind of stuff. Well, that day I left somebody's house, and the first song I heard when I got into my car just so happened was Hail to the King by Avenged Sevenfold. And that has been the Aaron Rodgers song ever since. My ticket king of the game is Aaron Rodgers, because he mentioned, you know, 3 weeks ago, I think we can run the table. And by running the table, they would have to do so behind his superb play. And he has been absolutely phenomenal in this three-game stretch. I mentioned he could be in the MVP discussion if they win these last three games and he continues to play well. They follow their leader. And Aaron Rodgers set the tone yesterday with the deep ball to Devontae Adams. He set the tone in the last three games with his superb play. Two 80-plus yard touchdown drives against the Houston Texans. Phenomenal game against the Philadelphia Eagles. And then just a dismantling of the Seattle Seahawks. Hail to the king. That is Aaron Rodgers, my Adam Cech ticket king of the game. Jason, are you going with the cop-out like I did, or do you got somebody else?
Well, when we talked before the show, I said that Rodgers has to get an honorary ticket king of the game from both of us because of his gritting through injury, playing after the game, saying he's not going to miss any time. Packers said the Packers would run the table. They're three games into doing just that and having just won probably the toughest game to make that prediction a reality. So Aaron Rodgers is absolutely deserving of it. But I am going to go with Demarius Randle. And you really could have picked any of the defensive backs. They all had a day. But I got to go with Demarius Randle, making a big play on the goal line, taking away a Seahawks touchdown, getting the ball away from the Seahawks to end the half there, because Seattle got the ball to start the second half, so that was a potential chance for them to double dip, and at that point the game was still within reach, so it would have been one heck of a ball game. Would have been a lot different had he not picked that ball off and Doug Baldwin had hauled it in for a score. So then he gets the second pick as well, and you know, those guys were all over the place, but I got to go with Demarius Randle because, you know, again, it was the Sam Shields-like play. He's kind of stepping up, making a play when a guy goes down. You know, he's kind of become the corner. He's kind of become the guy. And we expected him to take a big jump this season and really improve after he did so well last year and took over for Casey Hayward as the other starting outside cornerback opposite Sam Shields. You know, he had the brain lapse or the brain fart in the playoff game against Larry Fitzgerald that unfortunately cost the Packers their season, but, you know, and then he had the core injury this year that kind of took him out and kind of put a damper on his sophomore season. But if he's going to come up and play like that over these next three games and down the stretch, you know, he's going to be one of the big reasons why the Packers might be able to accomplish a lot more than we thought they would a month ago. So my Adam Cech ticket king of the game, former Arizona State Sun Devil, Demarius Randle.
And I'm not surprised at all that you happened to pick the Arizona State guy when you got an opportunity. But Demarius Randle, absolutely deserving. He probably had the best play of the game with that interception, because you're talking, it's 21-3 at the time. If Seattle has a chance to double dip, now it goes from 21-3 to potentially 21-17, at worst 21-13. And, you know, like you said, you're talking about a different ball game from there instead of 38-10 and a thrashing of the Seattle Seahawks. Brings me back to Chicago Bears. The last thing we do before we sign out, prediction. Do the Packers continue to roll, or do they stumble against the Chicago Bears? Listen, I said this game feels like a layup, and I know I said there's no such thing as a layup, but the Packers are a better football team than the Chicago Bears. They are playing like a better football team than the Chicago Bears, which they did not do a year ago. I think that the defense will continue its good trend. I think the Bears continue to find ways to get in their own way. I think Matt Barkley is not good at football. I think the Packers can do some things against the Bears' offensive line. Their tackle situation is not very good. Their interior without Kyle Long is compromised a little bit. And Josh Sitton has played well, but he's not his usual self. So I think that they can do some things on the interior to beat the Bears. I think they stop the run enough. I think they score enough points. I like Green Bay 27-10 at Soldier Field over the Chicago Bears. Jason, what is your prediction, Bears versus Packers?
Well, I think we'd be foolish to pick against the Packers, so I'm not going to do that. But I'm looking at this weather situation. Packers are dinged up. Aaron Rodgers is on one half of a leg. So I'm thinking we could be looking at one of those 13-10 type of games, 17-10. You know, take your pick. I don't know exactly what score I'm going to go with. You'll see it later this week on Cheesehead TV. We put up our predictions. But I don't even know if I'm going to give Green Bay 20 points. I still think they get the win. But I think it's going to be a classic December cold weather Packers-Bears game where very few points are scored. It's just going to be a tough day to move the ball a ton. It's going to be as hard as a rock. Throwing it against that cold air and the receivers going to have a hard time hauling it in. I mean, you know, I say that and then Jordy Nelson goes off and catches 12 balls and for 120 yards and two touchdowns. So who knows? But that's, you know, I think the Packers definitely get a win here. I don't think they stumble. Might be a little bit of a struggle at first. Could be one of those games where it's kind of slow for the first half and then they kind of pull away in the second half. But I like the Packers to get the big road win, and that takes us into the big Christmas Eve matchup against the Minnesota Vikings and a chance for the Packers to really kind of put their stamp on this playoff run that they're trying to make and then also try to knock the Vikings out of the picture when that seemed almost impossible after they lost to them in week two and Minnesota started out 5-0. So I'm going with the good guys this week.
So there you have it. We both like Green Bay to win this week. Both very happy as we've done the show. This is probably the happiest we've been on a show other than maybe last year against Seattle in the history since we started doing this show together. And that will end today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason. He is at Upbeat Lollipop. I'm joking. He's at Jason Perrone. I am at Jacob Westendorf. Thank you guys for listening in all season long. I know that you're probably wondering why in the world we're so happy when a few weeks ago we were ready to burn the whole place down, but we appreciate you guys listening in, giving us a platform to speak our opinions on this team. It's been a fun ride so far. We both like Green Bay to extend their winning streak to four games and get two-thirds of the way to Aaron Rodgers' run the table proclamation. Ticket King, we want to thank our sponsor. Check it out. It's right down the street from the stadium. Run in, grab your tickets right before the final guaranteed home game of the season against the Minnesota Vikings. Go grab your tickets, run inside, and help them beat those boys in purple. Thank you guys again for listening. I have one final anecdote for you, if you will, and that is very simple. Since they just beat the Seattle Seahawks, just remember, anytime they play them from here on out, who needs the 12th man? Because we've got number 12, man. And I love that saying, so I'm going to use it as much as I can. So thank you guys for listening into Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.